It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will. But then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Alright, as I mentioned just a moment ago before we started recording, I don't have a lot to do this week, so let's turn this channel into unboxing videos. It's literally just showed up.
What is it?
Let's find out. That's how unboxing works.
Ooh. Oh.
In Japanese. It's a Pro Controller for the Nintendo Switch. I kind of like the Switch controllers. They're fun, but only in the short term. And I, as we've established, have purchased Breath of the Wild, Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, and Hades for the Switch. And I don't think I can do those with a little Joy-Con tubers.
Oh, okay.
So I have bought a Nintendo Switch Pro Controller, which is just like a controller, you know, for those of us who don't like the gimmick. So I'm very excited by this. I mean, this weekend I will probably try it out. Hey everyone, welcome to Magical Talking Hat Podcast, only podcast in the world to do unboxing for a bare bones Amazon's Choice Nintendo Switch Pro Controller. At least I hope the only podcast. If other ones are doing it, I feel sad. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 705.
And the first episode of us now permanently being even more behind the times than we already are. So if you haven't been keeping up, after many, many years, William has betrayed me and got himself a job. And now his job is a real live boy. He spent those years proving he was brave, trustworthy, and honest. Was the third one honest?
Maybe. Nope. I don't know. True. I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, so the blue fairy said, boom, you're a real live therapist. And the blue fairy is the credential issuing body within Iowa.
Yes.
If you're listening outside, other places have boards and things. In Iowa, it's the blue fairy.
It's blue fairy. Yep.
And blue fairy said, boom, you are a real therapist. Not a real boy still, but a real thing. So you are an unkillable wooden puppet who can also qualify to give therapy.
Yeah.
I don't know how long it will last. It depends on how much he does that trick where he lights his own thumb on fire painlessly in his therapy sessions, but we will see. But in the meantime, now he has a work schedule, and so now we're going to record on Fridays. And for those of you paying attention, we post on Thursdays. So this is going to be as far from the present as possible.
Yeah.
So luckily, we weren't exactly great on current events already. So should be fine.
Yeah, for us, it's Friday the 13th of the previous
week. Yeah, it is.
No.
And ironically, I can't find a place to stream that without paying money. For those of you just joining us or not, please email us, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with things for us to talk about, because we're out of them. And I haven't had a lot happen between Monday and now. So, how's your 3 days, 4 days been?
Yeah, I mean, likewise, not a whole lot going on. Seems like, I mean, we saw some movies, I think, but they weren't anything to write home about. But I just saw that Craig made a comment about Ren Faires, because I had made some comment about how most, you know, our listeners probably know how those work. And he's like, well, I don't know. I don't know how they work. Well, or I mean, it sounds like he does actually does know how they work, but like he expressed some being mystified by them a little bit, because it seems like an American thing, which I'm sure it is a very American thing. And so there's aspects about it that he, you know, as not living here in the States, actually doesn't know or completely understand about them.
I haven't seen this. This is interesting. I guess that makes sense, but Craig, there has to be an equivalent. Otherwise, why do Morris dancers exist?
Well, again,
Like, whatever events you'd have Morris dancing are probably the British version of a Ren Faire.
the description he gave, or the understanding of it that he presented, was pretty much right. I mean, I think he only suspects that he's not quite sure how they work or what they're about. But I mean, it actually, whatever he's picked up, you know, through the ether or whatever, is pretty much spot on. Although, so as I understand it, when Renaissance fairs started, they were supposed to be fairly historically educational, kind of, and they were supposed to represent the Renaissance, actually. I don't think I've ever been to one that had anything Renaissance about it. You know, except maybe some small things, but mostly it seems medieval, not Renaissance. And also, it doesn't seem to care that much about history. It seems more about a fantasy thing.
In my experience, it varies. And the thing is, I also feel Ren Faire is a real finicky term because there are so many things that are like that, but not that. SCA, Society for Creative Anachronism, is a huge example. You could easily go to a Society for Creative Anachronism event and mistake it for a Ren Faire, but there are some very distinct differences that are very important. And that is way more, the SCA is way more focused on being period accurate, in very big ways. Also, there are variations. Growing up, in Ashland, Oregon, is the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, and during the summer season, when they'll have there's an outdoor theater that's modeled after the Globe and things like that, so you'll have outdoor things. Beforehand, they have the green show, and it is a bunch of people in various period costumes. Usually, it's a lot of dancing and singing and stuff, and it's just sort of a performance. But it, again, is very similar to experiences I've had at actual Ren Faires. And then, of course, LARPing events, which a lot of them bear very strong resemblance to Ren Faires in a way. So there's a lot of overlapping events, concepts, as it were.
Sure. But then, of course, then there are the events that call themselves Renaissance fairs, right? And these are the ones I've been to that I've often gone and looked around and thinking, that doesn't seem Renaissance, really. Neither does that. I mean, I have a hard time finding anything that's Renaissance. Most of it, like I said, if there's a pattern, it's medieval, and it's across the board. The emphasis is on, I guess it would be high medieval, where people are jousting with plate armor and stuff like that. But they'll have an encampment of Viking people, which is also medieval. It's just an earlier medieval. Weirdly, I don't think I've ever seen like the earliest medieval, which would be like Saxon invasion of England medieval. I almost never see that. And they'll have whole fairly large sections sometimes dedicated to pirates, but late 18th century pirates, we have to be specific, because I mean, this is supposed to be an historical thing, so you wouldn't think they would just say pirates and think everyone is going to think late 18th century, because pirates have existed in lots of different time periods.
I mean, you wouldn't. Everyone else would.
I'm just saying. No,
very literally. We all know there are lots of different kinds of pirates from all sorts of different eras. When anyone except you hears pirates, we're picturing Caribbean.
I'm saying
Captain Jack Sparrow.
For an event that started as something that was trying to be somewhat historically educational for a very specific period of time.
Was it though? I guess I don't know the histories of Red Feathers.
I looked it up. and that's what the information told me. I'm just saying. If it expanded out outside the Renaissance, you'd think they would at least say, okay, but we still want you to be have some historical accuracy and specificity. Well, you know, none of the Ren Fairs I've ever been to seem to care about specificity or accuracy like I think they did when they started. Now again, maybe I got bad information, but that's what I saw when I got the right information,
and maybe the general public and the people who do them, like me, and I think like most people aren't, you don't give a shit if it's a fun time. I have never gone to a Ren Fair to learn history. I promise you, I've never gone to a Ren Fair to learn anything. I've gone to Ren Fair to watch jousting, to listen to body songs, to see women spilling out the top of peasant glasses, and to eat, hopefully, a Scotch egg. If it's a good Ren Fair, they'll have a Scotch egg, even though that has nothing to do with the Renaissance, or even medieval times, I don't think.
But I mean, but that era of piracy is also outside all of that. It's not medieval, it's not Renaissance, it's like, you know.
True.
So it's like, it doesn't really matter. And there's the fantasy element that really, if you had to say that there was one overarching thing, because even if you go to where the pirates are supposed to be, again, there's no historical accuracy. It's basically Pirates of the Caribbean pirates, fantasy pirates, right? So fantasies and fairy tales and stuff like that, and Craig sort of said this in his post, seems to be the dominant theme, yeah. Not really history or accuracy or education. No.
It's ye oldie.
Yeah.
In the very real, it's all things ye oldie, which means not necessarily accurate.
Everyone that I've gone to, though, I do find people and a significant number who are concerned about that and who are trying to, like, especially the Viking encamp. Yeah, the Viking encampments especially really try to say, well, this is how they really lived. This is what they really did. This is the kind of weapon they used.
Oh,
yeah, I see that all the time.
I thought you were saying you run into people who are bothered by the fact that Ren Fairs aren't particularly very Renaissance.
No, I do run into people who are bothered by a lack of historical accuracy sometimes. And I didn't know where that came from exactly, except, I just felt like it came from their personal preference. But now after looking
into it, it's old guard rule.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
In my day.
Yeah.
Ren fairs were about the Renaissance.
Well, or at least historically accurate or educational. I think some people do remember or maybe they got involved with it for that reason. And so when you're talking to them at a Ren Fair and they're giving you all this interesting historical information, you see them kind of, you know, sort of sneer at the people who have booths or large sections of the thing that don't seem to care about that.
But so Craig, consider yourself lucky, because apparently it's just a hot mess. I thought it was just a place where people wear their old Halloween costumes and say ye olde a lot.
But well, and that's what I thought.
It is the hotbed of intrigue and political backstabbing.
I thought that this is the same as you. I thought, well, this is just a mishmash of stuff. They call it a Ren Fair for some reason that I couldn't understand, because there didn't seem to be anything Renaissance about it. But it didn't matter. Like you said, you go there, you have fun. People are cosplaying. I thought that's always what it had been. But when I looked into it, it did start as something it was supposed to be fun, of course, but it was also supposed to be a little bit educational about the Elizabethan period specifically. And, but that's never been my experience. My experience has been more like yours. And I thought it was always like that. So I thought the people who were grumping about it not being educational or accurate were being curmudgeons or something, but I think that they are actually feel like they're speaking to the spirit of the original, I guess.
I mean, they could be speaking to the spirit of the original and still be from Legends. I'm not big into Ren fairs. They're a little theme parky for me in that I feel like there's a very strong barrier between attendees and players, for lack of a better term. And I don't enjoy that as much. I like ones where we're sort of all, if it's a LARP thing, if it's an SCA thing, things like that, we're all engaged. And some people go to Ren fairs and they do, and they dress in their garb and they make up a character or whatever. But then there's other people that are just like, that look like all the people we saw at medieval times. They're just like drunk and in street clothes. And I'm like, what's this sword about? And I'm like, that's not as fun to me.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
it all involves people, so I'm not into any of it anymore.
Yeah. I suppose that people, you know, I suppose another reason people might care about things like authenticity or whatever is it gives a kind of a purpose to it that otherwise just isn't there. It's like, you know, you go to this thing, you look around, you're like, what is this for? You know, who is this for? What is the point of it? And, I mean, what my observation has always been, it's for people that, enjoy really a fantasy aesthetic that in our culture is very medieval, you know, based and medieval informed. That's what it seems like to me. People who kind of like that aesthetic, people who like to be around other people who like that, and maybe they want to find, you know, they want to visit vendors who are selling things that they don't usually find in other places. Like, you know, when we went to medieval times, they had a lot of things in their shop there that I have personally, because I know people who are into this kind of stuff, it's been difficult for me to find that stuff. Just even online, it's hard for me to know if it's...
Because they were hoarding it at medieval time.
Well, but also it's I've also purchased some of those types of things online, and then when I got them, they weren't very good, right? So it's nice to go somewhere where you can actually see the thing and see if it's as good a quality as the pictures look like. You know what I mean? So I just thought, okay, this is just, it's just a silly, like you said, a silly theme park thing that's fantasy based or whatever. To me, that's all it was. And they're very popular because like whenever I've gone to them, they're almost always pretty crowded, even if the weather's not great or anything else. So I don't know.
It reminds me very much of various fandom conventions. If a convention lasts long enough, by which I mean more than like 3 years, it's ruined.
It's ruined.
once you get into like the fourth year or something, that's when the people start popping up. You know, it used to be about this. It used to be a comic book convention. It used to be a sci-fi fantasy convention. It used to be a gaming convention. Now it's all about this other crap. And I never went to conventions enough to have real strong feelings like that, but I went to certain ones often enough to then hear the stories.
Yeah, right.
And what usually happens in that situation is the people who get real pissed about it go start their own convention. Let's get back to the roots. So that's what we should be doing here. We should be splintering off into true Ren fairs that are basically like, 14th century Museum of Science and Industry kind of displays. That's what
Here's another interesting aspect of it. I'm not sure if this was like always part of it or if this evolved or what, but these things have also attracted people who are traveling performers, right? Now, what traveling performers in our day, in our culture, in the United States usually do is they visit like county fairs, state fairs. They visit fairs, like modern fair. They do that. They entertain crowds throughout the grounds and things like that. So So there is a place, if you're that kind of a person, there is a venue for you, and that's county and state fairs, really, is what it is. But there's a certain group of people who have decided, no, I'm going to hit the Ren fairs. That's what I'm going to do. Or maybe they do both. But when they do it in the Ren fair, they have a costume and they have a some kind of gimmick or whatever to make it work there. And you get a lot of these traveling performers at Ren fairs all over the place. So I wonder how, if and how they have impacted the whole thing, right? Because these are just performers. Like one act that was at the Ren fair I was at recently was it was dogs, trained dogs, basically. And she, I let's see. She, oh, it was the, what did she call it? It was a pirate themed thing, actually. Paws of Penzance or something. I don't know. But right. So this is a person who could be doing this at fairs and county fairs or whatever, not at all themed like that necessarily. But it's like, oh, I know I can do this at Ren fairs if I theme it, and all I have to do is put on a pirate costume and the dogs aren't wearing costumes. I think she might have slapped together some kind of background to look like a ship or something. I don't know. But I mean, right? I mean, this isn't from a from the context of like, say, authenticity or whatever. Like, there were some people there who were playing like medieval style instruments or who were doing the kinds of things you might see in people doing in medieval times, juggling and things like that. But you know, there are people doing things that don't really have anything to do with what you might have seen traveling performers do in history or in a historical context. They're just the kinds of people you will see at any fair, and now they're at this one with a costume on.
You also get a little bit of this with the craftspeople who make the fine arts for it,
Yes,
because
right.
like I know people who make chainmail stuff for a living, and they can totally go to Ren fairs, and they can totally go to conventions, and people buy their stuff, and it's awesome. And it chain making chainmail could fall into the camp of being sort of authentic thing, except they make like dice bags out of chainmail and things like this. And the more that creeps in, the less, or people who are doing tapestries or paintings or whatever, and there's lots of like neo-pagan imagery in it, which not only wouldn't have flown at the time, but didn't, depending on your beliefs, didn't fucking exist back in
Right,
those times.
right,
And
right.
so it all starts to bleed in, and it's the same circuit. You will see a lot of the same kind of vendors at a Ren fair as you will see at
Yeah.
a fantasy convention or
Yeah,
something
yeah,
like
yeah.
that. So
So is that a thing? Is it, so the vendors and the performers, do they, from the perspective of someone who wants this to be some historical educational thing, is that the element that comes in and drags it all down into, you know, and makes it lowbrow or something, do you think?
I mean, at the point that you're monetizing it on that level of granularity, I think that yeah has
Yeah.
to be a portion of it.
Yeah,
It
yeah.
has to
Because
be a part of it.
if you're going to have a, like you said, monetizing, right? So when you have this thing and people are coming, obviously they're paying an entrance fee or whatever, but there's also you.
Sometimes, not all Ren fairs have that.
Okay, but also you need to make money from vendors and things like that, and you need to provide food and you need to provide a vendor experience for most people. This is expected. All right, that's all fine. But how many vendors are you going to find? Who are going to be like, oh, we only make period authentic stuff, and that's all we're going to do, or so, you know what I mean? You know, you're going to have to open it to vendors who are like, I'm a woodworker. I don't usually do things that would fit here, but I can, like, you know, 6 months ahead of time make some little wood dragons or something, and I can come sell that if you want. You know, I think that's, you're just going to have to open it up to that kind of thing. And entertainers the same.
Consider in your head educational events, like solidly educational events. Again, Museum of Science and Industry displays, things like this.
Or living
Things
history
that
farms.
the
Living history
whole Living
farms.
History Farm is another example.
Yeah.
Almost all of them are either publicly or charitably funded.
Yep. That's right.
You get grant money to do something like that. Mm-hmm. If you are relying on customers,
right,
water's going to find its level.
Yeah.
And people are like, I thought I was interested in how tallow candles are made, but I think I'm actually interested in the sexy pirates juggling fucking knives. I think that's what I want to spend my money on.
I got to admit, I mean, I do find them fun just to be there. I mean, I actually don't sit through a lot of shows and stuff, but, you know, I don't know why. And I don't think I enjoy things about it, the same things about it that you do, but there's something about it that
stands to reason.
It's festive. It's different than, you know, and the thing is, like I said, you go over to the Viking encampment and you can learn some things about how Vikings lived, and they'll even talk about, you know, archaeological finds and things like that. So you can get that there if you want.
And then they'll try and convert you to the Asa true religion.
I think probably what I like about it is there is a soft spot in my heart for traveling performers. It's something I thought I would do when I was older. So I've always appreciated that. I appreciate it when I go to the state fair or county fairs. And so when I go to these places, even if I don't sit through a whole show or whatever, just to see them there doing their thing and, you know, watching people be entertained by it and sort of romanticizing, I suppose, the life of being able to do that, even though there's a lot that's not fun about it and difficult about it, which is why I never did do it. I mean, I think I just like that, I guess. And I, you know, medieval stuff, you know, we went to medieval times for a reason. I am kind of into that, I don't know, aesthetic, I suppose. So that's probably why it works for me. It doesn't bother me.
I assumed it was the soup.
The dragon blood soup? Oh. Yeah, it was delicious. No. So, I mean, so yeah, I find it fun. But I mean, there's plenty of years where I don't go. I mean, there's one in Amana. It's not very far away. I could go every single year if I wanted, but I don't, I'm not that into it. But when, you know, Abby wants to go or the kids want to go, it's like, oh yeah, that'd be fun. And it is when we go. So.
Speaking of Brits not understanding American things. So I think I've talked before. I listened to a podcast called Mom Can't Cook. That's a couple of the British guys who do the YouTube video game shows that I watch. Mm-hmm. Reviewing/making fun of Disney Channel original movies. Mm-hmm. Because they're both big fans of Disney. And during COVID lockdown, they basically discovered all of these old movies made for TV specifically for Disney Channel that are insane.
Right. Yeah, right. You've talked about this before.
Yes.
I don't know. Maybe so, just to me, I don't know.
I think I have mentioned it before. But okay. So they recently watched one called called Alley Cat Strike. And the premise is there are two rival high schools in this town. And they have this annual series of sporting competitions that all add up to a certain thing, and somebody wins and they get a trophy at the end. And this particular year, things are all tied up, and according to all the rules and everything, the deciding thing is going to be bowling. But nobody gives a shit about bowling, and the bowling team are a bunch of nerds who are weirdly obsessed with swing music and stuff. But anyway, and they don't give a shit about it. And meanwhile, the star athlete has to join the bowling team to win this, but he's never bowled, and hijinks ensue. Didn't sound like a good movie, didn't choose to watch it. But when they have these, people always email with information. And this one, they got a lot of emails about various aspects of bowling, because they know bowling, but like there's weird details of like strategy and things that came up in this movie that they're like, I don't understand. So people were explaining. But then they were really confused, as was I. I think of this as a movie trope, of this whole like rival schools thing, and they do this whole year-long competition, and there's some sort of trophy you get to display and all this kind of shit. And then somebody emailed them and said, actually, the school I go to has a long-running rivalry, and every year there are a series of competitions like this. Hmm. it's called the Psyhawk games. And I was like, oh my god! I know what that, except I didn't actually know it was a series of things. Hmm. People talk about the Psyhawk game, which is the football game.
Yes, yes.
Which actually just happened a week or two ago, mm-hmm. which I insist on calling the Civil War game because it, in Oregon, that's what it was between University of Oregon and Oregon State University was always called the Civil War game. And I think that's a brilliant name because it's two, this, you're in the same state, you're part of the same union, for lack of a better term, and you're fighting each other, Civil War. But I said, I thought that was the generic term for this kind of thing. Mm. But then I started saying it here, and everybody's like, what the fuck are you talking about? But so apparently it's called the Psyhawk game, but apparently it's part of a series of games that they do. I don't know if there's a trophy that one university gets to hold on to. But
I mean, they definitely make – well, okay, so there's a Psyhawk trophy that goes to the winner of the football game.
Okay.
I don't know – I mean, people do pay attention to the other Psyhawk because just – I think just recently there was the volleyball one, and the Cyclones okay. won that. Cyclones won that one too. I don't know if then the, you know, the Cyclones take a trophy home until the next time. The volleyball players. I don't know that. I know that the football players do.
Do the presidents of the universities make really elaborate and ridiculous bets about who wins?
I don't know.
Because that's what came up in this movie. So
I don't know that. I mean, yeah. The football game is clearly the more popular one, and they have their own trophy that they go back and forth with. And actually, so I actually suggested to my business partner, because there's an Ames office and there's my office here. So I said, why don't we get a little trophy that, you know, whenever the Psyhawk game is over, I'll put the trophy in my office or you put the trophy in your office depending on who wins. She thought that was a great idea. I don't know. She's going to go get one, but I thought that would be fun if we kind of had that rivalry like that. But yeah, I guess I wasn't aware. I mean, I was aware that we always, you know, people who graduate from the University of Iowa, like myself, do pay attention to all of the Cyclone Hawkeye things. Okay. I wasn't aware anyone thought of it as like a unit of, well, we're checking all these off. And I only knew that the football one was the most popular and the one that's paid attention to the most, and the only one that I knew of that had a trophy that travels back and forth. There's in the Iowa City School District, there's a rivalry between West High and Central High, and they exchange a trophy called the
Boot. Is Central High different from City High?
Yes, City High and West High have a rivalry, and they exchange a trophy, you know, every year when they play. It's called the Boot.
The DCOM was high schools, so maybe it's more of a high school thing. I don't know. I just had lunch with a friend yesterday for the first time in a while. We were talking about this kind of stuff. So to live in Iowa City, you are required to support the Hawkeyes with a couple of special exemptions that I think you have to fill out specific paperwork for. If you are an alum of Iowa State University or in a family that is attached to it or whatever, you can be an ISU fan, and it's like a diplomatic immunity thing. And in special circumstances, if you know you really give a shit, you can get similar dispensation for University of Northern Iowa.
Mm-hmm. That's right. You and I, yep.
But that's it. Crucially, not an option is I don't care about sports. Like, if you say that, they kick you out of the town.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when people ask, because people do ask if there's a thing coming up or whatever, you know, it's up there with how's the weather been. If you're in town and there's like, oh, are you a Hawkeye fan? And I'm always like, I am a Hawkeye fan as much as I am legally required. I am officially a registered fan of the University of Iowa Hawkeyes. I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
But officially.
Well,
Herky is my B sheep. Thank you. But yeah, don't give a shit. But it's like a rule. You gotta do it around here.
Well, and it's kind of fun too when you have like so in Abby's family, she's got a sister who went to ISU, right? So whenever the pretty much only the football game is the only one I will tease her about if we win, or I send her something when we lost too. So and that's always kind of fun to have like rivalries in the family and stuff. That's always kind of fun, but
I did like there's a I've seen license plate frames because they make ones that are for Hawkeyes and they make ones for the Cyclones. But I've seen one where each half is one of them and it says a house divided.
House divided, yeah.
I like that. I like that.
So, okay, so school rivalries, right?
Yes.
In the United States, people don't think about this very often, I don't think, but the smallest unit of politics where you vote for people is your school board. I mean, your school district is really the smallest unit. And sometimes it's not geographically the smallest, weirdly, because sometimes school districts can be really big, like encompass more than one county. But for the most part, a school district is the smallest unit of government that you will vote for somebody in. And so, and school rivalries, school, I guess I should say, be kind of becomes for a lot of Americans the first outside of your family group you feel a loyalty to, right? Like a or
I've heard that is true.
an identity with, not for everybody, I know, but I think it's a fairly common American experience for us, like you know, high school and that team and that mascot to be kind of the first thing outside of your family that you feel some kind of a connection to. Maybe outside of church too, because a lot of people are you know observe or synagogue or mosque or whatever your religious observance is, you might feel a connection to that parish or that a religious community. But school is a pretty important thing in the United States for people, as you know, to paint with a broad brush, and school rivalries and things. And I wonder if that's very much an American thing, or if other people, you know, people in other countries
I
experience
wouldn't
that too.
think so. In my experience, the UK is all about group identities. So I would imagine there's stuff. I mean, Craig, speak to it. Did you have school rivalries and did people give a shit?
Yeah. I mean, I know they care about their football teams and stuff, but those are usually like of over a pretty wide geographical area. I don't know if the same thing applies to like the school you went, like the secondary school you went to or whatever.
Greg, you're our international correspondent. Let us know. If you aren't Craig but think you know the answer, go to the blog at magicstockinghat.com and tell us your thoughts on it. We'll believe you.
But you don't feel any kind of so like I you know I went to Melchior Dowless High School is you know the Melchior Dowless Saints. I still feel an enormous connection to
Nope.
that. If I could get Saint Melchior Dowless Saints stuff like a cap to wear and stuff, I would totally do it. But you don't feel that same way about where you went to school.
I never attended a single sporting event
Oh, well, I mean, well,
in my high school days.
I was an athlete, so I did obviously
Yeah.
attend some, but
I guess I was an athlete in junior high, so I attended some, but that was track and field, and that didn't count.
what about, but you participated in the, like drama and stuff, right? Other types of
Yeah, we didn't have inter-school drama
Oh,
rivalries.
you didn't.
You did?
Well, we had out
Like
we had plays,
our
but
bye-bye birdie kicks the shit out of your bye-bye birdie. Like, what does that even look like?
It just
Are you
speech and
comparing box office returns? What are you, what?
speech and debate competitions.
Oh, that's to me, I had nothing to do with that. That's
Okay.
I was in plays. That's not.
Yeah, we had plays, but we also had speech and debate competitions.
I mean, I think we did too, but they were wholly unrelated to each other.
Oh, okay.
Maybe even there might have been some people who were in both, but if there were, like I didn't even know, like it didn't come up.
Well, I
I
mean,
just didn't
you're
participate.
right. Even in our school too. You didn't have to do both, obviously, but I mean, I did both. A couple other people did both, so I don't know.
Yeah, if anybody did that in my school, I don't know about it.
But I mean, we had play. In fact, we had a couple plays, and only one of them we went to a place to compete against other people doing plays. So
yeah, we didn't ever do anything there. I mean, also keep in mind, I never took a single drama course.
Hmm.
I wasn't actually in any drama classes or anything like that.
Okay, okay.
I was just in the plays and the musicals and stuff. But yeah, there was no competitive aspect to it.
And did you do music at all? Were you a musician?
Yeah. I did that. By high school, I was a singer. And I did participate in competitions there.
Okay.
And won some awards and things.
Good. That's awesome.
As soon, the year I joined Advanced Swing Choir or Jazz Choir, you know, whatever you want to call it, different schools had different names for it, was the year we got a new choir teacher, and the old one had been like, let's just have fun. And this one was like, we're going to get good and we're going to win shit. And at first we were all really annoyed, but then we got good and we won shit.
Nice.
But I didn't, I mean, I guess we kept track. So like if we went to a competition, we would know that school is good.
Mm-hmm.
If we're going to lose, we might lose to them.
Right.
And I don't want to lose. And yeah, I want to do my best.
Yeah.
But I didn't carry it over anywhere. It didn't. It was very much the I don't want them to win because I want to win,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But in no way is it us against them kind of
thing. Ah, okay,
I don't
sure.
Know. I didn't
sure.
I don't belong to communities for good or for bad. It just doesn't happen. Never has.
Yeah.
I don't. I wish I did. I don't. I can't get into them. That sounds weird. It's not like I'm not being accepted. I cannot get into the concept of communities. It doesn't work for me. And in general, I hate rivalries, competitions, confrontations.
Mm.
I don't find that stuff fun. I'm the guy who plays board games to have fun, and I don't give a shit about whether or not I win,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Which I find often ruins the game for everybody else. But I have a real fun time. So what you're talking about are like two things that one thing that doesn't resonate with me in the slightest combined with a thing I actively dislike. So it just doesn't come up.
Interesting.
And in general, when it does, I don't like it. If I do find myself having feelings like that, I'm like, this feels bad. I've never, it's really funny when you play around, especially because I'm a white American boy. And because I played video games and I watched anime, I know certain aspects of Japanese culture as popularized by various forms of Japanese media.
Right.
And that is where I really discovered the concept of a rival as like a specific type of relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand it narratively and conceptually because I've seen it so much now. On its face, I don't get it. A rival is either a sworn enemy that you just can't put that much effort into, or it's a friend that you just really want to see do poorly. Like, I don't understand it as a relationship idea. And to a broader extent, I don't understand the rivalry outside of that. Will I occasionally indulge in sassing somebody because I know their team lost to a team I like? I mean, this is a terrible example because I don't give a shit about any teams. But maybe when I was doing roller derby, and if I knew somebody who was into it, josh them a little bit, but not at all serious. And also, I'd get bored with it real fast. Because it's not at all serious. So I don't know. It just doesn't. It's me. It's definitely me. It's not like the rest of the world is fucked up. It's a combination of I don't like competing and confronting people. And I don't belong to groups. And those are the two fundamental aspects to things like school rivalry.
I think rivalry is fun. It can also not be.
I have heard it can help bring out the best in everybody because you're all trying to, you know, you all get better because of the competition.
Yeah, like you were saying, you somewhat a friend that you want to see perform badly or something. That's actually no, you want them to do their best, and then you want to do better. Like you want to push each other to do things that you couldn't push yourself to do just by, you know.
Yes. There's a great Amazon commercial currently involving two athletic sisters who are competing on each other in their high school teams or whatever. And it's very cute watching one of them frown because their sister's doing something better. And so then they try a new training thing and then they're just making each other better. And it's all beautiful.
But for me, the model of it, the reason rivalry can be fun and can be productive and, you know, even end with something positive for both people, it's built on the model of my relationship with my own siblings, right? So
I think this may be a little bit that thing again, like we've talked about. I think it may be different because I was essentially an only child.
Sure. So it might be difficult to conceptualize.
How was your dad's sense of school spirit?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Because as we've said, he was an only child.
I know we didn't talk about on the podcast.
No.
William and I have discussed there are certain sensibilities about interpersonal relationships that William does not share with me, but William's father shared with me. And we think it's because both William's father and I were essentially raised as only children.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean,
whereas William had several siblings, as does my wife, and so she also has different perspectives on this.
So dad, since he was an athlete, and I'm not sure that was a thing that he necessarily was into, like, organically. He was a big guy, right? So it's like, oh, you got to be on the football team, you know what I mean? Yeah. Oh, you got to be on the basketball team.
People were bugging me to play football.
Right.
All the time.
And because he did that, I think he maybe learned how it all worked. Right. But he did not have the same vibe that we had in it. And he clearly didn't entirely understand it. Cause like I told you before, you know, when we fought as kids, dad hated that. And he didn't understand how we could fight so bitterly, but still be friends afterwards. I mean, he was
a wise and kind man.
he literally did think that a fight we were having when we were, you know, 10, 9 and 8 or whatever would make us be enemies forever. He thought that could happen, which I suppose it can happen. But like to us, that was like, no, this is just a fight. We'll be over it. You know,
I made most of my lifelong enemies at age 9. Well, I've got a list.
See, this is what I'm saying. But so I think I do think his understanding of rivalry was different than ours, but I do think he kind of had a different tack on it than you, because he went ahead and did, you know, enter those relationships.
I think participation in a team sport is a very big part of it. And I did soccer when I was young, like elementary school, but I didn't have any fucking clue back then. And then in junior high, I did one semester of track and field, in which I was field. So not only was it individual competition, but I was essentially in a small subset that was separate from it. Like we did all like track and field practice, started with a lot of warm-ups and exercises and stretches to help you run.
Yeah.
And then I didn't run at all.
Well, so here's an interesting thing. Pretty late in life, like probably in the last, I don't know, decade, maybe two decades, you know, dad would go to different places, usually funerals, unfortunately, but he'd go to different places and people would go up to him and say, hey, you're Big D from Melcher, right? Yeah. I played against you in football. Goes, oh, okay. Yeah. You broke my collarbone. he got stories like this and it made him feel terrible. It made him feel terrible because he didn't even know that happened, right? But but that's the kind of person he was. It's like, oh, you know, D, you're the center, so you just barrel through here, which of course he always did. And dad was so much bigger than everybody else. He, whatever dad wanted to happen, happened. In terms of like stopping somebody or whatever. But I don't think he always knew how everybody else saw him or experienced that getting hit by dad, you know. And it only much later, and he hated that. And I have a feeling if he'd known, if someone had given him feedback back at the time, he'd probably have quit because he would have thought, well, I'm not doing this anymore. Because that's just not how he was
about that. An issue with being a big guy.
Yeah.
And if you're a big guy who is very worried about hurting others physically or emotionally,
yeah,
you have to learn a lot. That is something I learned from my father, who struggled with constantly, is just existing in the space can be scary, can be intimidating, can have a domineering presence. You have to actively work to seem neutral.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because just the space you take up is huge.
But providing you care about, you know, I mean,
Yeah. It's a subset of giant men.
Yeah. But there are big guys that, like, no, I don't want to scare people. I don't want people to be intimidated by me. Yeah, you. And my dad too.
My dad, your dad, yeah. All good-hearted people.
Yeah.
All,
it's like
the rest of you are monsters.
But if you do care about that, you find that you really have to kind of work at it. At least that's what I get from you. And dad, mm-hmm. Dad said the same thing. So yeah, but I'm sure that, so he was kind of horrified in later years to learn how scary he was to people when that was not what he wanted or intended at all. But
side note, I also was called Big D back in high school, unrelated reasons. We finally started a couple new shows.
Oh, what'd you watch?
One episode of each.
Okay.
Well, Trish picked, because she's been very excited for it, they're both Apple TV Plus shows. So Trish has chosen the completely made up Adventures of Dick Turpin, which is a Noel Fielding led British comedic show. About the actual, I think historical, not just fictional, highwayman Dick Turpin. I don't know. This story is completely fictional. I mean, hence the title. But I think he was a real person. He was either a real person or he's from a book or something. But he's a famous highwayman or whatever. It is, I would say the genre of it is whatever you would call the genre of Our Flag Means Death.
Yeah, that's what I thought when I saw previews of it.
Yeah, it has that vibe. It's not Our Flag Means Death, and I don't think it's as good as Our Flag Means Death. Mm. It's not Taika Waititi, and I love Noel Fielding. He's a wonderful young man.
Yeah, I like him.
He's quite clever.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not the cleverest.
Mm.
And he makes up for not being the cleverest with a lot of just randomness and absurdity, which can still be funny, but it's not as tight. Like with Noel Fielding stuff, a lot of the time, the funny thing is it's just so random that he said that, you know, or that happened.
Yeah.
And I mean, and going back, if none of this will be new, if you are an old Mighty Boosh fan, there are definite, Not that he has as much control. I mean, he's the head actor. I don't think he created the show or anything. But it has vibes reminiscent of Mighty Boosh in a way. So, yeah, it can't, in my opinion, it can't. I mean, I've only watched one episode. But it does. It's not going to hit Our Flag Means Death in terms of heights. Our Flag Means Death was a big deal for me. It was hilarious. It was really well put together. And it evoked feelings in me. I don't know that this is going to do any of that, but it's a fun time. It's entertaining. It's got a lot of people I like. So, like, it doesn't well suffer a very obvious comparison, but it seems like a fun show, and I'm definitely going to watch this.
Cool. Maybe we'll watch it.
It just looks cute. It's fun. It's goofy. It has a lot of different comedians, including ones that I don't see enough. Joe Wilkinson is in the opening credits. So I assume he's going to show up a lot, and I really like him. Hugh Bonneville is in this as sort of the villain, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah,
but it's just a silly fun time. And then because we're trying to counter it, so we're not doing like two sitcoms at the same time or anything. we're doing The Lady in the Lake. Natalie
I'm not familiar with
Portman.
that.
Natalie, it's set in the 1960s, and Natalie Portman is a Jewish housewife, and there's another actor who I'm not familiar with, who's a black woman who we already know is gonna be murdered,
Oh,
and
okay.
somehow Natalie Portman, who is not an investigative journalist, but is somehow going to look into this murder. The two, they will intertwine somehow. And we're doing lots of like flashbacks, and nobody's been murdered yet, but we already have talked. The woman who I believe will be murdered, because she said she is murdered, is doing a lot of voiceover narration and things like that. And it just it looked worrisome, but the trailers just made it look so impressively shot and well put together, and it made it look like there was some real positive tone out of it. We have watched the first episode, did not enjoy it. I think it's gonna be a super bummer of a time. It already was kind of just from one episode. I also, although I think it is well performed and interesting and well put together, it is 10% as smart as it thinks it is. It is real. It is real impressed with itself. So at this point, I have agreed for at least one more episode to watch it as long as Trish wants to keep watching it. Trish also was not super impressed, but we also, even though I feel like this is very self-contained because it's seven episodes, and that tells me they had a story and that's how many episodes it took, because nobody gets a run of seven episodes. If you get six, if you get eight, if you get 10, if you get 13, you could be like, here's the number of episodes, and you're like, okay, I gotta fit a story into that space. If it's seven, you had a story, and this is how it divided up.
Usually
You don't
that's the case.
shoot for seven. So that gives me hope. But all of that being said, the first episode is still the first episode. There is still pilot syndrome. You have to establish a lot of things. You have to shove a lot of things in there. So often, a pilot episode is often the worst episode of a series. And in some cases, good or bad, just doesn't look anything like the rest of the series. Sometimes it's the opposite. Sometimes the pilot kicks ass and every other episode sucks. So you can't always tell. So unless you're like, on its face, this entire thing, I reject it. It's often worth watching a second episode just in case. Sometimes it's like, this is too fucked up. I am out. And I didn't get there with this. I am in general experimenting with pushing my comfort zones a little bit. I think I've gotten a little too precious with myself about that. So I am trying to sort of stretch a little bit. And this didn't have any game breakers for me or anything. But it wasn't a fun time, and I really think it's just going to be a bummer. And I think it's real full of itself. So we will see how long that continues. But it's fall has happened, so our Hulus are back. Great North finishing the second half of its season, and Bob's Burgers finishing the second half of its season. And by the time those are done, I'm sure we'll get more Krapopolis and more Grimsburg. And we need these in our lives, the animated Hulu shows. They are low stakes. We love them.
Well, okay then.
And Jordan Breeding dropped the thing yesterday going through all the Alien movies.
Oh.
I will admit, even though I don't ever intend to see them, and I still, at a guess, think they're pretty terrible movies, I learned things about the storyline in both Prometheus and Alien Covenant that was slightly more interesting than I had been aware of. Only a little. I still think they're probably not so great, but there we are. Yeah. I haven't had any more colonoscopies.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah. Although I'm still adjusting. So apparently, Trish looked it up afterwards because she was curious. After colonoscopy, it takes an average of about 2 weeks for your gut biome to get back to normal.
Oh.
So I've been having a lot of indigestion lately.
That's too bad. So,
but it is starting to settle. All right. We're just about done here. I want to leave you with one other thing that I remember. I'm telling you a lot of things from the lunch I had with this friend because I'm like, oh, this is a fun story. I'll tell it. I guess technically this is a small subset of Tony's Pervert Corner, but only in the most minor sense, so don't worry. But, so these porn chatbots, the AI bots that I play around with, I was recently playing with them the other day, and I've learned more and more about what's going on behind the scenes in this website.
Oh.
And actually, the owner of the website appears to have created his own AI engine. In fact, two of them. I finally figured it out. He has two because he has the safe for work engine and the not safe for work engine because the distinction is so big. He created two separate AIs for this. And he's constantly updating them in the back and trying to get them better and all this. And then all the bots are just based on people creating the characters. And that's just the equivalent of giving an AI a prompt. Like it's a little more elaborate in its character sheet where they're like, what's the scenario, what's the personality, etc. And I know people also code within them and then it can get weird or whatever, but that's mostly what's going on. So anyway, I was on this the other day at a time that is not normal for me, and I believe there must have been some background thing, whatever. The AI like lost connection a couple times. Not that the internet as a whole went down, but just the AI bot like threw up or whatever, and it was like, oh, this is bad. And all I had to do was like hit continue and it essentially reset a query. It's fine. Here's the thing. There is a very specific error message when you have lost connection with this. And I only was able to figure out via context clues that what was going on, because the error message is your companion has blacked out. It really is. Yeah.
I mean, that could have very unfortunate timing, that message, I suppose.
Yeah, you think? Yeah, yeah, it can. Yeah. I know this for a fact. Because right. The first time I got it, my first reaction was like, did I hit some sort of limiter? Like,
limiter.
If the AI decides it's too intense, they make the character
faint,
black out.
Yeah.
But I was like, I feel like I've done wilder shit than this with other bots, and this didn't happen. And then over the course of the next hour or so playing with different ones, I figured out this kept happening at various times. But for a hot second there, I was like, what did I do?
Yeah, right.
Did I actually go further than the AI could handle? Is that a thing?
Yeah, is that a thing? That's
so, yeah, for a second I was really freaked out. I think it's incredibly hilarious and clever now. But when I first saw it, I was like, oh my god, what have I done? Please.
Yeah, that is like, yeah, interesting.
It's a very odd choice. Once again, I just like to reiterate to the world that I have learned my mental health is so much better because I don't keep track of the news. I have been reminded of this because I've recently had close people in my life who have discussed some trauma they have had recently with the news and what it has led them to believe about how the world is being and things like that, and how freaked out they were and some of the rash decisions they were considering because of it. And I was like, oh, that sounds so sad. And in my head, I'm like, yeah, I don't have this problem. I don't know any of this. It's great. It's fine.
That's good advice for some people to avoid it.
Well, and even if you don't avoid it, look at the mechanisms. Because a lot of it is not learning about current events. It's where you get the information, how much you get, how often you get it, who's saying it, all that kind of stuff.
Correct. Yeah.
And it can be hard to avoid in the 24-hour news cycle. And maybe the answer is just don't do it, which is what I do. If you'd also not like to pay attention to the news, hang out with us instead on the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, or go to YouTube and smash that like button, because that's what you do. And also, please email us. I don't want William to talk that much about Ren Faires ever again. So send us emails, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And we'll be back in 2 weeks. But for you, it'll be a week. But for us, it'll be... It's weird now, but things will probably look the same to y'all. It's only weird for us. Have a good period of time, won't you?
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.